We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling. On the corner.
Hey there. We at Blue Wire wanted to thank you for your continued support of this podcast. With over 90 podcasts across our network, we are committed to bringing you great content to fill that sports-shaped hole in your heart. To find more Blue Wire Pods, search for us on iTunes or check out BlueWirePods.com. And remember, one day sports will return and it will be glorious. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another week of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andreas Hale. It's been a couple days since our last show, and it's been an eventful couple of days. This weekend, we have UFC going down, which we talked about on our last show, so that'll be a fun one. We're going to talk about WWE that has a pay-per-view this weekend as well, Money in the Bank. We're going to preview that towards the end of this show. We're going to talk about weekly pro wrestling as well. But I want to start off, Dre, with just a whirlwind of a wild-ass story that happened on Twitter. And it all started with Earl Thomas, safety from the Baltimore Ravens, dropping a cryptic message on Instagram saying, "Yo, I just want to let everyone know I'm going to be on TMZ tomorrow." And it's like, okay. And he's like, "Me and my baby mama." And originally people were like, or he said his wife, excuse me. He's like, "Yo," originally people were like, "Fuck." Like he Ray Rice on her or he hit her or something. And then the details poured out. TMZ's like, "Fuck it. He announced it. Might as well put it out there." And this was the wildest story. If Tyler Perry would have wrote this, I would have said, okay, this shit makes sense. But it really happened. Dre, his wife held him at gunpoint, caught him in the bed with I guess, some Snapchat thotties and his brother. I don't know how that works. We'll talk about that. And then she ended up getting arrested with her crew of chicks. Tell me that you were awake and glued to this story.
No, I wasn't. I was, yeah. I saw it and I was like, this is ridiculous. So, no. Nothing is surprising to me anymore. Not that I don't care, it's just so ridiculous. And then the whole thing with his brother, I'm like, there's a lot going on here. So, yeah. That was kind of wild. This whole thing is wild, but I don't know, man. I just feel like, you know what I was actually paying attention to yesterday.
Oh, that's very true, which we're actually going to get to that in a second.
Like this was...
To preface that, fuck Jason Whitlock. But yeah. Also, no, like with this story, it brings up so much craziness because when you look at it, there's the keys in between, right? So him and his wife have an argument. He bounces from the crib. His brother picks him up. They go and get the Airbnb. That's like, okay, you want to separate yourself from the situation. You and wife, you're fighting. You got to bounce. Then she's like, yo, I want to see where he is. She opens his Snapchat, catches videos of him and some chick on the Snap, and then tracks him down using Snapchat. I didn't even know this was possible. But this brings me up to my first key thing. Men shouldn't cheat. Just by nature, we're fucking stupid. It's just, it is what it is. Women are smarter than us. They will always catch us. In this case, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. You just bounced. You go and you Snapchat some thoughts to meet up with you.
Like I said, nothing ever surprises me, and it's something like this is just like, all right, man, cheaters gonna cheat, right? But in the day and age of social media, it's not much you can get away with because our arrogance often leads us to our demise. Because what we do is we like to broadcast our bullshit on social media, and as cryptic as we think we are, we're really not that cryptic because, as men, we're just not that smart. So we do stuff like this and be like, aha, she ain't never gonna find out. Listen, man, if your girl's not saying anything to you, she probably knows.
Period. Oh, yeah.
If she's not asking questions, like, because what I've learned with women is if they're asking questions, it's because they already know the answer. They don't really want to know what you think. They just want to catch you in a lie. So when she starts asking questions or when she's not saying anything, like, okay, I got this actually because I was watching The Sopranos last night. My wife is doing another run through of The Sopranos. And everybody remembers that Tony cheated relentlessly on Carmella. There's a scene where she takes the money out of the yard. Like, he has money stashed in the yard. And because she finds a fingernail of one of Tony's many, many mistresses. And when she finds the fingernail, she doesn't say anything. She just takes the money. So Tony goes out to the yard to go into the stash, and he recognized, like, bands are gone. Like, not just a little bit of money, bands are gone. And he's trying to figure out who took the money. Carmella took the money. The next morning, he goes to get breakfast, and the first thing she asks is, would you like some coffee? And he's, like, looking befuddled, like, trying to figure out what's going on. She knows. Hasn't thought about it yet. So he goes upstairs, and on his nightstand, amongst his wallet and keys and everything else, is that fingernail, which is just her subtly letting him know, like, I know, and I know that you know because you know that the money is missing from outside, and I wish you would say something. He goes downstairs, and, you know, he asks Anthony Jr. if he had been in the backyard, and he's like, no, and he looks at his mother, and he's like, I'm going to go upstairs, and that's how the episode ends. Because, dude, as men, we just aren't that clean with how we approach things. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. There are some stupid women out there, just like there's stupid men. And they're not even just stupid. They're just gullible and unwilling to believe the wrongs that have happened to them, which is why they get cheated on over and over and over again. And sometimes, in both men and women's cases, I'm like, you just can't be this naive. You just aren't willing to accept it, or you really don't think the situation is that bad. Like, you're upset that she cheated on you or he cheated on you, but you're like, I could deal with it. But for the most part, the cheating party, you're going to get caught. And this fool, like, he had that extravagant wedding and all that shit. And to do all this, it's like, come on, man. You're an NFL player. You're not, you're not a receptionist at the law office or nothing like that. Or you're not the cashier at Walmart trying to cheat. You're an NFL player with a profile. You're going to get caught. Stupid.
Just all the time. Then you put your brother into it. And the wife's next step, which is straight out of The Boondocks, she calls her friends. It's like, yo, how should I handle this? And she must be best friends with the killer kung fu wolf bitch because they decide to crew up and, like, yo, we're going to confront them now. Walk in. Seems as though they catch everybody in some type of soiree of butt nakedness. And she pulls out his own gun. which she lets the clip out of, but does not know that there is one in the chamber and starts brandishing it around. And allegedly, there's a video of her putting it right to his head. He then has to wrestle the gun from her, in which someone tosses her a knife. Like, now this shit's getting crazy. They brought a knife to a gunfight. And she's wielding this knife, and cops show up and find her chasing him around a car. He's running one way, she's running the other. And we talked about next Friday, last show. It's like he's Day-Day and Baby D. So he won't get stabbed by her. And then she gets arrested. This shit's incredible. We need a full 30-minute reenactment of this. And by the way, domestic violence is not funny. I'm so glad he's alive and didn't get shot. But the circumstances and the story, you can't say that it's not funny.
No, but you know what? I knew it was real the moment it was like, it's over for you hoes, or whatever it was that she says that they quoted. I was like, oh, this isn't made up. This is for real. Because only a black woman would say that shit. Like, nobody else would say something like that. And you couldn't make that up. Like, no white writer could make that story up.
No, you got to take that verbatim out of the police report. Yo, that, it made it so much funnier. But then, you know, I would like to say I sympathize with Earl Thomas. In my first marriage, I remember, and I told this story on a podcast probably 4 years ago, but I remember when my ex-wife first found out I had a girlfriend. And yes, there's a lot of backstory to this. If you haven't been listening to podcasts for 5 years, I'm not going to go into it. I was a horrible human being. Nonetheless, she had a work husband. She deserved it. So she found out I had a girlfriend because I went to Vegas. I was allegedly seeing my best friend, and he was doing photography at a show. So I went to tag along and just act like a journalist and do a write-up of the show. That was a Slaughterhouse show. Shout out to Slaughterhouse. First time I ever saw Royce. So interviewed them. But then the last 2 days of the trip, I spent it with my girlfriend who lived here in Vegas. Hotel room, all this stuff. So my ex-wife found that I had had a hotel room, some emails between me and my girlfriend or whatever. And this was a month before she kicked me out and we ended up splitting and divorcing. But I remember her finding out and she was like, yo, I'm going to bounce to take the kids. And I was like, you're not taking kids anywhere. Like, we're in the house. Like, what are you doing? I was like, I'll leave. So I put on my flip-flops, put my Xbox in my book bag. I was walking down the street in, like, rural Kansas. Like, I wasn't a black man looking mad suspect. And I got a block and a half, and I remember hearing her just Tokyo drift the side of the street. I look back, and she's coming at me, like, 30 miles per hour. Like, when they tried to run over Austin. And she's booking it. And I'm like, yo, I think she's really about to hit me. She screeches like 10 feet away from me. And just enough so I can jump on the hood. And she takes her momentum like another 5 feet. I was like, yo, you are really about to hit me with this car. And she just went out, fuck you, I can't believe I was like, you're going to hit me with a car? I was like, you're ridiculous. And I'll never forget that. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, she had a gun to his head? That's completely believable. I was like, no, I could see that happening. I almost got hit by a car once. And it's not even like she caught me in the act of anything. Like, if she would have caught me with my girlfriend, she probably would have hit me with the car. It's a good chance of it. And I was dumb back then. I'm dumb now. This is why I don't cheat. Like, I don't. Like, if I could get like a little coin, I am completely rehabilitated from being a cheater, never cheating again, because I realize I'm horrible at cheating. It does no good. And I couldn't hide it if I tried. Every time I've cheated in my life, I've been caught. Every single time.
Yeah.
So Earl Thomas, I can't even blame him for getting caught because guys are stupid. I got caught all the time too.
It's just what's the risk? And you know, like that's always
it's never worth it.
Is it worth what you're putting out there? I mean, look, man, some of y'all listening to this podcast, y'all cheating right now. So I already know. Like, I ain't worried about y'all. This is just what y'all do. But at the same, and a lot of people who do cheat are in denial. They're just like, I'm good. There's nothing to worry about. Then you get caught, and then you're singing the song like, I should never cheat it. Because you never think it's going to happen. It's like jaywalking, right? Like, there's a reason why you shouldn't jaywalk is to not get hit by a car. But when you jaywalk, you're like, I ain't never going to get caught jaywalking. And then you get caught, and you're like, that was stupid. There's like this big-ass ticket for something you could have walked like a few more feet and just crossed the crosswalk. Did the straight and narrow. Be on the straight and narrow. Unless you're willing to risk it all. If you are cool with that, do whatever. Earl Thomas clearly must have been cool with that because he married her, so she's probably going to take half. Like, forget the arrest and all that shit.
Oh, she's taking... No, well, that might get him out of it.
Yeah, we'll see when more details come out.
Like, that's attempted murder. Like, if it's on video and she got a gun to your head, I'm not positive of the laws. I mean, your wife's in law school. You tell me.
I mean, but we shall
I would assume that's attempted murder.
We shall see how far this goes. The point is that if you're willing to, because, I mean, the thing is that I'm quite sure this wasn't her first public display of crazy. He's seen this before to some degree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't go zero to the gun in your face.
Right. So if you've seen this before and you're willing to risk it all, because risking it all may not even be just half, risking it all could be your life. Or your ability to walk or see. Like, dude, my wife watches the ID channel all day. And every time I walk in, I'm like, oh, shit. Because there's somebody getting murdered for doing some shit to their significant other. It's always somebody that's getting murdered. And I'm like, yo. And they're like cheaters and all this stuff. And I'm like, at a certain point, it's just like, yo, man, you got to know what you're dealing with. And is it worth it? Because you might be mad if she takes half your money, but if she takes your life, there's really no, there's no get back for that. It's over.
No.
So, yeah, Earl, make a better decision. That was stupid.
Very stupid. And I don't know. The best part of the whole night was people digging up old tweets from his brother.
Just stupid. Like, not only are you stupid, your brother's stupid.
He just laid out the whole game plan on Twitter.
Dumb.
Like, yo, you're wildin'.
That's what I meant by arrogance, man. The arrogance is killing me with some of these cats. Like, how can you be this arrogant? I mean, just to go off of something that we talked about earlier in the week, speaking of arrogance, you know, the whole Deuce Palooza crew thing that came up. Yeah. And your man out here just talking about, like, A, report me to the police, and then B, like, still talking. And then admits, like, oh, my PR team wrote, dog, what are you doing?
Like, yo, didn't you apologize? No, my PR team wrote that and made me say it. What?
Like, come on, man.
This is not beneficial in the least bit, sir. Like, he's like, if I really sexually assaulted 40 women, wouldn't there be an arrest report? Some type of crime? I was like, oh.
Do you want one? Like, that's the question. Do you want one?
Is this the step you want to go next?
It's arrogance, though. That is extreme arrogance. Like, not even believing. I mean, come on, man. Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, R. Kelly. It's all arrogance. This is all ego and arrogance. You do it because you can. Until somebody stops you. And then when somebody stops you, it's not your fault. So, like, in all these cases, like, even Earl Thomas, I'm sure he had an excuse for doing it. But nobody cares. Like, it doesn't matter. It's over, dog. It's over.
I'm not sure if there's a good excuse for cheating. There's damn... Because we're about to move on to the real thing we should be talking about in terms of, you know, Twitter conversations. But the only excuse that he should provide on the timeline, if he wants to give one, is to why him and his brother were having coitus in the same room at the same time. Arguably on the same bed. I feel like there has to be limits drawn. That's not to say I haven't known people in my life that have done some weird shit. I grew up in New York. This was a thing. I have a completely different story that I do not have enough time to tell here. About a couple of New York friends that are just wild. But even then, those were friends. I feel like when family's involved, you kind of got to go separate. You need some space. There's some things I don't need to know about people. Yeah. So it's... If he's going to explain anything, Earl needs to explain that. And shout out to Mark Ingram. And Earl's like, please let us have our privacy as a family. And Mark Ingram was like, nah, dog, you need to tell us details. He's like, the homies need to know. I was dying.
There's no such thing as privacy when you do. Like, dog, there's no such thing as privacy on social media. Like, somebody, I'm not saying any names, just somebody I know was on social media and was talking about their kids. And I guess it got ugly. I don't know. I don't know how far it went. But then they were like, respect my privacy. And somebody was like, no. Like, you just put it out there for us to digest. So, no, we're not going to respect your privacy. Like, when you air out your grievances on social media, it's for the world to see, whether you like it or not. Like, come on, man. That's why I'm very private on social media. Even my wife looks at me sometimes like, you share too much. I'm like, I really don't. Like, you have not seen the half of what people share on social media.
Too much?
Yeah.
Your wife doesn't even have social media. So
exactly. So anything to her is too much. Like, she'll look at it and just be like, that's too much. But the fact of the matter is, like, people overshare and then get caught up in some stuff and then want sympathy for oversharing. It's like, no, man. You let us in. And in Mark Ingram's case, he's absolutely right. Come on, man. You and your dumbass brother already went this far. Just let's take it home.
that's it. We need the full story. Let's just clear the air. It's almost unbelievable. So that's bananas. We alluded to it earlier. What captured your real attention during the weekend, during the past couple of days on Twitter, was the story about, I want to say, two white men shooting a black man while he was jogging.
Yep.
And so the story comes out, happened in Georgia. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah.
Is his name. It's Ahmaud was seen on video, and this is where I saw it first. I saw the video that started going viral before I knew the original story or the story that these two men had told. You can clearly see him in the video just jogging behind what is a stagnant truck. And then someone hops out of the truck. They have words. He tries running around the truck, met by another man who has a shotgun in his hand, like Elmer Fudd for some damn reason. Those two start tussling. He's shot by the guy with the shotgun. Another guy hops out of the truck with a pistol. It looks like he may or may not have shot at him. Nonetheless, Ahmaud was hit two more times. You see him fall and collapse. That's as much as I could watch on the video. If it's longer than that, I surely didn't see it or want to see it. And then it comes out that the district attorney didn't want to charge these two men, and she left it up to a grand jury. And then the details come out of these two men said they thought he was a burglar. Broad daylight. Nothing in his hands. Thought he was a burglar, and decided to then take the law into their own hands, which I guess is legal in Georgia. So they weren't charged initially, but now people want justice for Ahmaud. I want to start by saying, do we even have all this if we don't get that video?
No, because they've sat on this video for 2 months. Just think about it. I mean, obviously, coronavirus wasn't a thing 2 months ago. So jogging outside was not something, you know, that anybody would be like, what is he outside jogging for? He was jogging outside. This is 2 months ago. They haven't been charged or brought to justice. But now the video is being released because, you got to force somebody's hand. And the uproar and the outcry is what's going to get these guys hopefully charged or at least detained. I mean, there's so many things going on here that it's exhausting, man. And it's a stiff reminder that while we're all indoors trying to not die from something outside, there's something outside that kills us more than it kills the rest of the world. And it's racism, white people. And like, you can worry about the pandemic all you want, but I got to worry about going outside and all the things that I can't do without getting shot. You know, you can't jog. You can't buy Skittles or a tea. You can't sell mixtapes. You can't, you know, you can't park here. You can't fall asleep in your car. There's so many things that being black, you can't do while you're black that gets you killed. And now, because this isn't even the law. This is just two random ass racist white men that just decided to kill somebody. Now they say, yeah, burglary. Sure. Okay. Let's just go ahead and assume that somebody robbed this person's house because, you know, I don't know what he stole because he's outside in jogging shorts and a t-shirt. Like, yes, I watched the video. I have to see these things. it bothers me to no end, but I have to see what I'm talking about. He's outside with a white t-shirt and shorts on. What did he steal? I can't tell. But that's the excuse, right? But even if that was the excuse.
Built-in excuse.
Even if that was the excuse that somebody robbed your house and took off, for you to drive after somebody who couldn't have taken that much because he has on a white t-shirt and shorts, and then shoot and kill this person. Because there's the castle doctrine, which is, you know, if somebody enters your house, you have the right to protect your house from the inside. But once they leave the premises, you can't go after them. They went after him and killed this man and weren't brought in. So I could do a whole show about this shit, but my heart can't take it. And I'm much angry about it. Well, I'm not more angry, but I'm just as angry about a certain individual's response to this shit. And it just made me realize, not even realize, it just reinvigorated my fucking hate for Jason Whitlock. I want to punch that coon in the motherfucker. Like, dog, there are few things more harmful in the black community than Uncle Tom. And my wife, we'll just call it what it is. LeBron James went on Twitter after seeing the video, because the video was made public to everybody yesterday. Yeah, it's about
time. Need my claw for this. Yes.
And LeBron basically tweeted that we are being hunted, that this is reprehensible. You know, basically panning the event and saying that this is troubling. Jason Whitlock, matter of fact, I'm actually going to pull up the tweet because I want to get this correct. Because, as you guys can hear me typing here, because this guy's an asshole.
I do know he took offense to LeBron saying that as black people we are being hunted.
Yes, here we go. It's a harsh, accurate. No, that's not it. I'm sure because he's going at Benjamin Watson now. This must be new. I didn't see any of this.
Oh, another black man he's going at.
Oh boy, he's going.
He has so much time.
Hill. He ain't coming for me though.
Okay. You want that smoke.
He said, "This isn't helpful. It's Twitter trolling. It's using this man's tragedy to build a brand as more outspoken than Michael Jordan. There are kinds of ways to draw attention to this tragedy. Suggesting that we are hunted every day, every time is just shit stirring." Fuck you, Jason Whitlock. Because what you are suggesting with this tweet is that in some way LeBron James is trying to take shine away from the Last Dance documentary and using the murder of a black man in Georgia in cold blood and broad daylight as a means to draw attention away from Michael Jordan. How fucking petty and stupid do you have to be to believe that somebody, anybody, would use death to take away somebody's greatness to put themselves on a pedestal? That is absolutely absurd and ridiculous. And boy, it pissed me off. Because
you are on his head,
dog.
Quick.
So, for those of you that already, a lot of you already know, I don't fuck with Jason Whitlock. Some of you don't know why I don't fuck with Jason Whitlock. I've told that story in the podcast before. But for the new ones, here's the footnotes. And when Sean Taylor died in 2006, was it 2006? I believe it was. Jason Whitlock wrote a story about how hip-hop killed Sean Taylor. And I wrote it pissed me off because he blamed the culture on killing Sean Taylor because of the jewelry and all this stuff. I wrote a response when I was editor-in-chief of Hip Hop DX saying that it was outright blasphemous to blame a culture instead of blaming poverty, instead of blaming just evil people. You don't blame a culture for murdering somebody.
Yep.
That's greed and poverty and a bunch of other things that have nothing to do with hip-hop culture. And so I started doing a bunch of research on Whitlock, because I never really read his. I think he was still at the Kansas City Star at the time. And I read it. Every time a black situation comes up, he's critical. And this is in 06. So I called him Uncle Tom. My wife said, in media, that's probably not the best thing you should do, slandering another black man. And I was like, fuck that, because back then, I was even worse than I am now. I didn't give a shit, and I went after him. This fat fucker emailed me trying to tell me that, you know, I needed to take it back and issue a public apology. I think Anthony Springer might still have the emails. But he wanted a public apology, and I was like, absolutely not, you coon. Like, I'm not, absolutely, no, there's no way. So this dude wanted to write, he asked me if he could write a response on Hip Hop DX with my audience. And I told him, no. But would you even let me write a piece on the Casey Star? And I was like, oh, you don't have the power because you're just a fucking writer and I'm the editor-in-chief. Relax. So there was no Twitter or nothing like that. So there was no real back and forth. There was just a few email exchanges and that was that. Fast forward 14 years and this bastard's still doing the same shit.
Collecting a fat ass check to do the same thing.
Dog, it's shucking and jiving at the highest degree. It is Uncle Ruckus before Uncle Ruckus. There are just so many things wrong with this man, because if anybody listening to this show is a fan, you probably listen to the wrong show. If you're a fan of Jason Whitlock, because I need to know any sports opinion that you recall of Jason Whitlock's, especially if you're African American. There are none. I'll just give you a spoiler. The only thing that you do remember is some shitting on Kaepernick, shitting on LeBron, or shitting on anybody that takes a stance on black pride or racism. Whitlock is the white man's dream. Whitlock is, not the white man, the white racist man's dream. The one who makes you think your racism is okay because the black man says it's cool. And the black man says, stop being so hard on him, black people. He's a tap dancing ass, coon ass, and blackface cracker motherfucker. Fuck him. Cover your kids' ears because this shit ain't cool. Like,
and he kind of, in a way, started your little bit of a beef during Fury Wilder week.
Yeah.
Because you asked a very intelligent question, but it turned out that on his show, he asked Tyson Fury some wild shit, and Fury had had enough of it.
Yeah, dog, he's a race baiter. He's a race baiter of the different degree, because he's not a race baiter in the sense of, you know, trying to bring up black issues. He's trying to slap them down, and he's trying to be critical, because, like, I guarantee you that he loves Michael Jordan's, like, play it right down the middle, Republicans buy sneakers too. I guarantee you he loves that. But you've never heard Jason Whitlock be first saying that this is wrong about the murder of African Americans or police brutality. You've never seen him go on any of his shows and speak about this first. Everything he does is a reaction to how we react to oppression and racism and violence. That's all he does. He has made a pretty penny off of our pain. And it's disgusting. And we got to find ways to get people like him out the paint. Because there's just no reason for people like him and Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk. And come on, man. Like, there's one thing for you to believe it, but 14 years of this shit? And to think that this motherfucker was going to be the editor-in-chief of The Undefeated? People forget that.
I completely forgot that. They got him out the paint quick, though.
Dude, because he wasn't good at his job. I mean, listen, man, he's not good. There's a video clip of him asking Kobe, like, this ridiculous question. I can't remember when it was. It had to be, like, 2013, something like that. He asked Kobe, he tries to twist a Kobe quote into something that Kobe doesn't want to play with young players. And Kobe, like, sits there and was like, yo, that was a Burkham yoga stretch that you did right there. I'm not answering that. Next question. Just completely blew him off. Everybody knows this dude is a fucking clown. But I just hate it, man, because as black people, like, this shit, like, we shouldn't be doing this to ourselves. Like, if there are black people getting murdered, the first thing you should say is, you know, your remorse or your anger or your frustration. Don't be mad at the man saying this is wrong. What's wrong with you? But he clearly doesn't believe that shit.
Ridiculous. And that's the worst part. I think he believes what he says.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him Uncle Ruckus. It's one level to do it for a paycheck. And now he's, like, you know, caught in the cycle of being, you know, the TV token black guy for Fox. It's another thing because he's believed this way before then. This is who he is.
Just, it's gross, man.
Oh, man.
And, but like I said, like, I had to read him on Twitter yesterday. And I mean, he's got how many followers does this fucker have? 325,000 followers? So I'm sure he's got a lot of retort, so he's not going to just come for me. Yeah. I mean, he probably doesn't even pay attention. I'm not that big.
MAGA people might come for you. The MAGA people love coming for you.
I mean, dude, it's like a broken clock. The shit is, they come twice a day. They can't wait. They can't wait. So it's unfortunate, man, because we really should be focused on what has happened, and which I am focused on, but I just can't take it when, like, the Last Dance documentary has been phenomenal, right? And I've gone on this show, and I've always said that Jordan's the greatest player of all time. But LeBron's going to have a more lasting impact on the world, and culturally. And I mean that as an activist. Because Jordan, while his sneakers and everything else are going to be the biggest thing ever, and LeBron is going to, he won't be as big as Jordan in terms of a global superstar. But he'll resonate with the community much more than Michael Jordan ever did in terms of activism and creating things for us by us. Jordan has never done that. But I think LeBron also knows that as well. that Jordan is always going to be number one. Yes, he's chasing greatness. But it's always hard for number two to consider themselves number one, especially when you see the accolades that Jordan has. But I don't think that LeBron's ego is big enough for him to say, let me use the death of an African American to try to boost me up and put Michael Jordan down. It ain't that serious. And people like Jason Whitlock, they're sick fucks for thinking that way. Terrible people, man.
But you got to address them. You can't just let them slide.
Nah, man.
So a lot of that. A lot of people are like, yo, you fell for the trap. Or you know this is what he wants, just to be talked about by you. Why are you falling for it? Because you can't let him slide.
Nah, see, like, eventually, look, I'm not on that level yet. You know, I'm very, I guess it's humble, because I'm not on that level, man. The man's got a ton of followers. He's on TV every day. He's making a lot of money. Like, it's not like I'm broke, but come on, man. He's a big star for his crowd. But I'm going to cross paths with this dude one day. And he's going to have to see me.
We almost did at the MGM.
Almost. Close. Almost.
Almost.
but he's, and like, I'm older now, so it's not on site, right? Like, it's not, like, that's how it used to be with me. It would have been on site. But now, it's like, I just want to have a conversation with you because I want to show you how stupid you are. Because it's not even about, like, calling you a Tom anymore, because we already know that. I need to get in your head and try to figure out, why are you this way? Who made you like this? What does your mother and father think of this? Do you have friends that are black, other than Marcellus Wiley, who's drinking the Kool-Aid as well? Outside of that, I need to know who you're hanging out with. And how damaging you are to a community, because you're clearly an insulated black man that is pandering to a white audience. Just keep tap dancing, Sambo, but I'm going to see you.
I tell you, I've told people for years, it's on site. Like, he got nothing to say to me. It's on site. And at this point, I forgot the exact instance that made me say that. But I know it was something. And me and him had an interaction on Twitter. And I can't even say what it was. I don't remember. But I just know he still got an ass whooping coming to him. And is that real? Where it's just, I just know it. I don't know what he did. I just know it. I owe him the fade. So there's no way he kept that athleticism. I just found out he was like a really good quarterback at Michigan.
Yeah, till he ate it.
Yeah, had no clue. But I'm willing to test the athleticism. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to start talking NXT and AEW and pro wrestling, because that's what we're here to do. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, everyone. We'll get back to the show in a second. But just to let you know, with no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can bet on.
You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
Just that quick, we are back and diving headfirst into pro wrestling. Starting off with AEW. And they had a really fun show last night. If you guys listen to this, it was Wednesday night. There's a difference between, and I like both, NXT and AEW. So at first we went into the comparison of, oh, this is just two really hardcore wrestling promotions on the same night. But now that we're like 6 months deep in this, we see that they are two very different promotions. And AEW, their environment is just more loose and fun. They don't necessarily need fans or a universe to bring that feeling in, because they found a way to just be loose enough to generate that. And I think this week's episode really shows that in a nutshell. All the performers were there. If they had a match, they wrestled and they went to the stands. If they didn't, they were just in the stands, adding to the show, giving different perspectives while filming, or Britt Baker having her shoe thrown. Everyone has a little something there to add to their character, add to their storyline, while also being part of the fans and bring energy to the show. MJF is hilarious. Doesn't break character, so he yells funny shit during matches. All that stuff helps AEW, and it doesn't necessarily take away from NXT for me. I'm just not of the opinion that I'm looking for the same things anymore. I think NXT is going to lean on just the wrestling. Like, yo, we're going to put on good wrestling matches. We're going to tell traditional storylines, but with just really good wrestling and a shitload of it every week. And AEW is like, no, we're going to be fun. We're going to have different storylines. We're going to have the bubbly bunch. We're going to have all this stuff, but we're just going to have fun with everything. So I think it's two really cool different ways of looking at
it. I agree to a degree. I think with AEW right now, the goal is, look, we're in this pandemic. Some of our talent isn't traveling. Some of our talent's not here. It's hard to really tell a lot of these stories. So instead of taking ourselves too seriously, we're just going to have some fun. And the match last night with Jericho, Sammy Guevara versus Kenny Omega and Matt Hardy was the epitome of that. Because there was really no consequence to the match. But it was, you know, Matt Hardy and Jericho been needling at each other. Kenny Omega's just Kenny Omega. And they had this ridiculous match with golf carts and throwing Matt Hardy in the freezer and Kenny Omega jumping off of things. And, like, it was so ridiculously fun because it felt like a house show. Because there was really no consequence to it. They're still planting seeds for certain stories because obviously now we're working towards the Moxley versus Brody Lee match at Double or Nothing. We have the finals between Cody and Lance Archer. But everything doesn't have to be serious. And I also think it was the first time that a lot of the talent had came back. And you can clearly tell how refreshed they were in the commentary booth. I think JR, Excalibur, and Tony Schiavone their chemistry was great last night. They were just having fun. It seemed like they were genuinely happy to be there and back at work. So I think AEW's not always going to be like this because they're going to have stories to tell, because they're always going to have a pay-per-view to work towards or something like that. But I think they do play a little bit faster and looser, and they kind of enjoy their own company. Like, wrestling is for fans, but if you try to give the fans what they want all the time, you're going to end up coming up short because they're just never going to be satisfied. Instead, most of the time what got a lot of these guys and girls here is by doing the things that they know how to do best and wrestling certain matches like they did on the indie scene or in certain shows. And what made Kenny Omega great is not something that the WWE would have looked at and was like, that's what makes him great. Like, most of the guys, they change when you get to the main roster. So in AEW, it's played a little bit faster and looser. And this show was the epitome of fun. The MJF promo was excellent.
He's just hilarious, though. Like, that gimmick is gold.
Yeah, he's great. Like, he's just great. Like, people say all kinds of things about him, but in terms of a heel that's unlike any other heel, like, he's not, because he's such a dickhead that even though he's a great heel, it feels good to boo him. And that's what makes great heels. Like, you want to boo them. You don't even want to cheer MJF. Like, at a certain time, like Austin and Rock, this is not to take away from their heel runs. Well, Austin's, yeah, because it wasn't that good. But Rock was an excellent heel that could draw heat. But at the same time, he was such a good heel that you had to turn him babyface because the crowd just ate up everything that he said. Guys like Kevin Owens are really good heels, right? But the problem is the WWE turns them babyface. If you ever turn MJF babyface, it'll just be the wrong move. It won't work. And they know what I guess they know what they're doing. And even the Nyla Rose match and her promo and her coming back, everything just kind of clicked for AEW last night in terms of this was just a really good show, and it was fun, and it was kind of inconsequential. Like, to have a show, what are we, 3 weeks out from a pay-per-view that was more enjoyable than a lot of stuff they've done the past few weeks is telling, because you need that, and it means that you're not a slave to your own storylines, and that's what they got. Where I disagree is I don't think NXT is the wrestling show. Actually, they're not the wrestling show. I think they really? I still think they're trying to figure out their Takeover is the wrestling show. Weekly's not a wrestling show. Not exactly. They're still trying to figure out what they are. And it's weird because some weeks they are a wrestling show. And then some weeks they're very promo heavy and take themselves really seriously. Or then another week they'll be like big drama show. Like, who attacked Finn Balor? I think they're still trying to figure it out. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but the push and pull of being on network on cable television rather than being on the network and catering to one audience that's still now trying to bring in viewers is telling. Like, you can tell that they're trying to figure it out, who they are and who their audience is. Because, they should be a super indie. That's what NXT is, a super duper indie. But they can't really be that because it's still a WWE product.
No, they have to play within the rules of the WWE. So they can only bend those rules. You can't break from them. AW do what they want. They break from all rules. This week's episode was a comedic show. The whole thing was a comedy. It had a space of, let's plug in a feud for Moxley, which I really liked. I thought Moxley's match was boring. I thought it led to something great, in which I looked at it and I was like, Brody Lee, title picture already? And I was like, yep, makes sense. Because you want him to feel like a big thing, win or lose the title, doesn't matter. He feels like a big thing. And him and Moxley should go off. I like it. I still don't think he needs the Dark Order in terms of the tag team. Like, Evil Uno does nothing now. He's the mouthpiece. He has minions. He doesn't need that tag team. They weren't even there, were they?
No, that's what I'm saying. It was just a lot of the guys, minions. A lot of people are just not available. So I think that's part of the reason why some of these storylines have been on hold, because a lot of guys just haven't been there to work.
Yeah, a lot of people came back, though, so that was cool. I liked how they flipped that. Britt Baker's been great. I think other people liked that I wasn't really feeling. You know what? I'm just not feeling this angle, but I understand other people liking it. Is Jake the Snake with Lance Archer. Just doesn't do anything for me. I think Jake the Snake is a legend, and he's great, but watching him with his ball spot lean over Brandi Rhodes and put the snake on her, like, it's cool. I saw this shit when I was 5. And it was a deadlier snake. Like, nah, I'm all right. Like, it's not the same Jake. And even then, he just upstaged Lance Archer. So I really don't give a fuck about Lance Archer. If I'm being truthful, I just care about Jake Snake, I guess. He just can't wrestle, so this other guy's his puppet? Like, I don't understand. It doesn't bring anything to Archer for me. I guess, Brandy's attacked, so Cody and him have a bigger feud. We were wondering last week, how do you stretch this out for 3 weeks? We know the tournament final. I guess this is how you do it. Cody now wants revenge, but to me, it's not giving Lance heat, it's giving Jake heat. I just thought it was more about Jake the Snake.
Yeah, I don't have
a... Other people loved it, though.
Yeah, I don't have a problem.
Small gripe. Yeah, I don't like it, but I understand why people would.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it, but...
It doesn't do anything for me. Lance Archer becomes champion. I'm like, oh, great, I get to see Jake more. It's like, cool, I don't care to... You know, 2 cents about Lance Archer.
Yeah.
Then we had the coup de grace, the main event, Le Sex Gods versus a team I have now deemed the Broken Lovers. Coda's not there, so we can't be golden, but we could be the Broken Lovers. And to me, I thought this was funny. This was hilarious start to finish. Matt Hardy doing wardrobe changes? Incredible. Just on the fly. Just changing wardrobes? The little stuff matters so much. The interference didn't bother me. Like, I knew shenanigans, they're, I don't know, they had that War Games feud kind of built in, right? So they're still, you just don't end beef. You guys were going to be 5-on-5 in the War Games. Like, you're not going to just start liking each other. So, no, yeah, keep that brewing a little bit. And then Sammy Guevara get hit by the cart.
Oh, God.
Getting chased down. That shit was hilarious. So I liked it all. I liked every moment of it.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a very good show that didn't have a lot of stakes, but it just felt good to watch. It was a good show. Then we have NXT. So let's talk about NXT.
NXT, to me, was also a very good show. They had some ends to tie up. So, oddly enough, I felt like this was the last, and we talked about this last week, last of that WrestleMania takeover that wasn't. And you got to tie this up to see if we can get to another takeover. Hopefully they get one in June. And then build towards that, and it makes sense. New feuds. So last night, Finn Balor, I thought he had a good promo. It looks like we're going to find out who attacked him, get him into a different feud. It'd be cool if, you know, Walter finally came over because Imperium's here now. So I don't know if they were able to sneak Walter over, but if not, then oh well. We get a new fresh feud for Balor. We got, what else was there? There was another, Charlotte versus Io Shirai, which I thought was a good match. I didn't like the ending.
No, I hated the ending.
But I said, damn you, Andreas, you were right. Because you jinxed it last week, you've been jinxing it for weeks. You knew it was coming. It pissed me off. But I like how Io Shirai handled it. And I like how they played that. It's just you're protecting a less charismatic person by putting them in with people who are more charismatic and probably deserve the chance above them. And it's not that Rhea can't get there. It's just that Bianca Belair was there and you used her to propel Rhea. And then Io Shirai is clearly there, but you're going to use her to propel Rhea. Again, like you're using more talented women whose time is now to get over someone to push a little too early.
Yeah, so, all right, we'll talk about that match. So, we all knew that Io wasn't going to beat Charlotte. I was fine with the non-finish, right?
Me too.
I was not fine with Rhea coming to save the day. Because I was like, this is stupid. What made it stupid for me, more than anything else, is that Io was upset afterward. Like, that upset. Because I couldn't understand, like, if Rhea cost her the match by interfering, which would have made more sense, then Io being pissed off would have made perfect sense. Instead, Rhea came to save her from an ass whooping, and now Io's mad at Rhea and not mad at Charlotte for trying to break her leg? That was weird to me. I just thought there was a better way to handle that. But clearly, I think there's two things actually happening here. I think there's a lot of things going on with the WWE. Well, NXT is trying to figure things out with certain characters. And I think, this is just my opinion, that the non-finish was something they came up with just recently. Because I think they also recognize how good Io... They're recognizing how good Io Shirai is. And pushing her out of the title picture might be a bad idea. So leaving the door open to maybe a triple threat of some sort, with the option to maybe put the title on Io, because there's only so much you can do to keep shitting on these Asian wrestlers, right? Kairi Sane's cooked. At least, you know, Asuka's, I mean, I hope she wins Money in the Bank, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but they spent years just flubbing the character. Even though she's been great, it just feels like they never really maxed out her potential, and she shows how good she is but whenever she gets ignored. But in the case of Io Shirai, she hasn't won the title yet. She's recognized by a lot of people as one of the greatest women wrestlers, period, on the planet. And when you put her in a match with Charlotte, and then you're watching the match, and you're like, yo, Io's just like people who haven't really seen it, for whatever reason, if Charlotte's the reason you tuned in to NXT this week, you watched it, and you were like, whoa, there's somebody that might be better than Charlotte. And that's Io. So I think there's a train of thought here to leave the door open. I just didn't like how they handled it. I'm glad there was a non-finish, because I'd have been pissed off if she got pinned. But the logic there just didn't make any sense. And again, man, I don't like babyface Rhea Ripley. I just don't like it. I like her more as like a tweener or a heel. Her being like, I tried to help you, and then shut up. I was like, dude, it's not working for me.
It wasn't working for you. Like, I like that. And Rhea Ripley, her best moment wasn't saving the day. It wasn't an attack. It was shut up as she was leaving the stage. Like, I was like, all right, cool. Like, you showed some type of personality. But still, Io's the star of that segment. Like, I think you're right. Protect Io. Charlotte's not going to be there forever. I don't see a bunch of women underneath ready to come up and grab that main event picture. I don't know. Gargano and Candice LeRae were in a match. They changed their music. The music is dope. But you don't have to change the music for everyone who goes heel.
Yeah, you don't.
Then you get stuck. Like, what the fuck? You're just going to bring back his own theme song? Old theme song when he goes face again in 6 months? But yeah, that's cool. I don't know if Candice LeRae, the heel, is better than Io Shirai, the heel. So then what? Like, you're stuck there. Unless you're just parading a bunch of women who are heels in the ray of Rhea Ripley, so she could hold the belt for a year. I don't know. I don't get that. I don't see anyone else being a threat outside of Io to really take that belt and run with it. And then you look at just the landscape of the whole women's division, and it's like, Rhea's young, yo. She had her time. You crowned her. Now let her fall back and build again. Let her have some of those secondary feuds. There was a chick who was also there I forgot her name. She's from the whatever brand.
Oh, okay.
What's that guy's name?
I'm talking about Chelsea Green.
Chelsea Green.
Yeah.
Like, have Rhea drop down and feud with Chelsea. Let Io carry that title for a second.
Well, you know
what? And let's see what she can do as champ.
The real problem is that by bringing Charlotte in, you're making a very conscious decision that only one person can go over on her, so it's hard to build up underneath her unless you establish some feuds. And they haven't.
Well, now you can have Io Shirai beat Rhea Ripley and Charlotte never take the pin and lose the belt.
Well, here's what I'm saying.
Technically.
What I'm saying is Charlotte is like a glass ceiling because nobody can get ahead of her, right? So in order to win the title, you have to beat one of the top women in pro wrestling, which kind of prevents other women from shining. So if in the event that Rhea was champion, you could see Candice LeRae or Chelsea Green feuding with Rhea because there's not this big presence of Charlotte getting in the way. Like, the Charlotte presence is more of a hindrance than a help because beating her is not something just anybody can do. Not saying that anybody can beat Rhea Ripley, but you can digest Rhea Ripley losing because she doesn't have an aura about her. But when you put Charlotte there, you're like, well, there's only like two people that can beat her, right? Actually, one, because it really seems like it's Rhea, but it should be Io. But you can't build up anybody else because...
Yeah, then you put Rhea on this crazy platform.
Yeah, so it makes... You're painting yourselves into a corner again. Because if Charlotte loses to Rhea, which everybody expects, at some point, but then who's next up? And if you haven't done a good... like, because really, the only thing that you've done when building next up, the only mid-card feud you are actually working with right now, is this Aaliyah, Xia Li feud? Like, what? That's like the only other feud that's actually happening. Like, they've worked that angle for several weeks. I mean, there's still the Tegan Knox.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, here's the thing. Xia Li is very much a Shelton Benjamin, if you will. Somebody, she's a good wrestler who can make other women look good, but they're never going to push her. And Aaliyah's just not that good.
No, she's been there for like 6 years. Yeah. I don't think she's ever going to get over.
She's not that good. So then you look at the rest of the roster and you're like, well, you got Tegan Knox, Dakota Kai. You have, I mean, Bianca just left for reasons I'm still not completely comprehending because she wasn't on Raw this week. And she wasn't with the Street Profits. I have no idea what's going on with Bianca Belair. But you have women that you can work with and develop these mid-card feuds in NXT, but you're really not. How are you going to build the next contender if they're not working? Like, who's next?
That's a good question. I mean, again, Candice LeRae is working. Chelsea Green is working. Like,
they're just not infused.
Tegan Knox is working. Yeah, it's just nothing sustained going forward. Candice LeRae will get into a sustained feud.
Well, she has to. Like, being a heel means that she has to be in something. And for the record, I like watching Gargano and Dijakovic, which was a really good match, by the way.
Yep.
It's so hard for me to buy Johnny Gargano's heel turn. It's like really difficult. And not because he's bad at it. It's because his motivations are stupid.
Yeah. And he has to be like a real chicken shit.
Yeah, and it's just like...
because of his size. Like, size doesn't matter when you're a babyface because you're supposed to be the underdog, right? It adds to your storyline. It builds more plot for you. He has the heart. It makes sense. He's small. He's clawing. He's scratchy. It adds to his babyface character. As a heel... and you're a small heel, you can only be a chicken shit heel.
Yes. And see, where this actually goes wrong, and I don't know if they've even thought about it this far, because for the record, Johnny Gargano is still one of the best wrestlers on the planet. This is nothing against Johnny Gargano. But there's a difference between Johnny Gargano heel with Candice LeRae, and we'll see how far this goes. This could be totally changed, and things could start clicking in a few weeks. But when Daniel Bryan turned heel with AJ Lee... and Daniel Bryan became this obnoxious champion, like, because nobody knew he had it in him. And there was, like, the way they had set it up, with him cashing in the Money in the Bank to win the title off of Mark Henry. Then he had AJ Lee, and then it was just really obnoxious, and then Sheamus broke, kicked him to hell, and then he just had that monster babyface turn. But in doing that, he developed this excellent personality. Whereas when I'm watching Johnny, I'm just like, I'm not buying this. I'm just not. Like, him and Candace were like, they're like the cutest couple on social media and everything, and it's like, now it's like, you've done me wrong. And I'm like, what? Like, you're still a really good wrestler. And for me, it's like, let the fans turn you, then you turn yourself.
Because they don't have fans.
The fans were, I know, but the fans were halfway there with Gargano on several occasions where they started booing him. That made sense for him to be like, dude, fuck y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm doing everything right. But, like, in the midst of no crowd to turn him heel, it just felt like, it doesn't resonate with me. I didn't like it. And him beating Dijakovic, I was like, this is a really good match. But I don't like this character. But he's still really good. I don't know. Maybe they'll figure this thing out. Because Candice LeRae as a heel is, like, really weird to me. I'm so used to her being a babyface. It's weird.
She's weirder than Gargano going heel.
Yeah, that's a couple. Something. It's like, all right. if you say so.
Then the highlights of NXT, we had the debut of Karrion Kross.
Killer Kross.
And Scarlett, which they gave her back her name. A couple months ago, they tried changing her name to some wild shit.
Yeah.
So at least she's Scarlett. No Bordeaux anymore, but Scarlett it is. And, man, outside of the first time I saw the Demon entrance, which was nuts, this has to be the second. This is above Bobby Roode's debut with Glorious. This has to be the second best debut I've seen in NXT.
No, Nakamura is number one.
No, I mean.
Yeah.
People went. The crowd went fucking nuts.
Dog, Nakamura.
And then the screen with the wavelengths was dope. But the production wasn't this.
What? I mean, this was very. Almost overproduced. But the Nakamura debut is like.
That was crazy because everyone went nuts. You were in the crowd.
Yes.
The feeling was bananas.
I mean,
that's the only thing that takes this back is because there was no one there.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Look, once again, I'm not calling him Karrion Kross until I feel like I'm forced to. He's Killer Kross. The debut, like, I watched it three times because I was like, this is amazing. Like, the work that they put in is amazing for this. Can't do this every week, but this is awesome. And what I felt like is that they did this really long entrance to set the tone for what it's going to be like a takeover and to get the audience to learn these words now because you're going to sing this shit. Like, because that's what's going to happen.
Don't tell Vince that. Can't sing a heel's theme song.
It's going to happen. It's inevitable. When you have... When Scarlett is actually lip-syncing the words to the song, it makes them feel important. And you're like, maybe I should learn this shit too. So I think it set a precedence like, okay, yes, he's a big deal. And whether Vince knows it or not, the crowd's going to get behind this song. It's just going to happen. And, I mean, dude, he looks like $1 million. Like I said, I keep saying he's can't miss. He's as can't miss as can't miss can get. He will get the title eventually. But don't rush it. Take your time with it because he ain't going nowhere unless he gets hurt. And even if he got hurt, he'd still be big.
Still crazy. Listen, I understand. This great feud, him, Ciampa, great first feud, I think. That's going to be a really good match. He's going to show his wrestling ability. Before he gets the title, some point this year, I really want to see, and there's tons of talent for him to feud with, I would love to see him versus Matt Riddle in a feud. Just because that match at a takeover would be so insane. And Kross can go. So I can't wait. Like, there's just so many possibilities, especially as a heel in NXT right now, that he can take advantage of that. The sky is the limit. So I can't wait to see where it goes.
People haven't seen him cut a promo yet. And that's the one thing that people really need to see because this man's promo cutting abilities are amazing. So.
Phenomenal. That's what's so crazy because you see all this stuff, even with like Aleister Black, right? Who was so good, the entrance was there, everything was creepy, but he's still really, he has to be more ominous than anything because his promo cutting isn't great.
Right.
Kross is so much different. Cross has that Kevin Owens style of promo.
Yeah.
And he just has a super sexy valet just because he can. It's not like he needs a Zelina Vega to speak for him. Like, Scarlett can speak for him, but damn, he can speak for himself. It's one of those, like you said, it can't miss.
Can't miss until somebody
fucks. The recipe is that you cannot miss. Only way you can miss is splitting them, which not happening in NXT. Lord knows what Vince does.
Yeah, we will not talk about that.
No, we got years before we have to cry and say how he's ruined him. And then the main event of NXT went down. Velveteen Dream, shout out to him rocking the bonnet in the promo in the middle of the night. Velveteen Dream comes out versus Adam Cole, and it went the way we thought it would go somewhat, which is Velveteen Dream not winning the belt, but now Dexter Lumis is kind of inserted in this, costing the Dream, and it looks like we're headed for a Lumis-Dream feud with a different road for Adam Cole heading into TakeOver, whenever there is a TakeOver.
I have no idea what they're doing here. I can't figure this one out. This Dexter Lumis thing is like, it just feels like it's getting in the way. Because,
well,
yeah.
It cost him, so.
Yeah, but he hasn't really established himself as anything yet, right? He's kind of a creepy guy who lingers and then he shows up for little to no reason. And
yes.
For him to show up in this match is weird because he just showed up last week. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like I said, I feel like they pivoted away from putting the title on Dream because of all the shenanigans and bullshit. I feel like I could be totally wrong. They may never had plans to put the title on him. But I feel like that's what happened. But if that it was the case, inserting Dexter Lumis into this just feels... It just is weird.
Because I guess you kind of keep him strong. Dream, that is.
Well, see,
because Lumis cost him and then they can go right into a feud. I don't know.
Here's the trouble. In my opinion, this is the trouble. All right. So when we talk about NXT and we talk about NXT champions, and we go from, let's see, we'll do Pac when he was Neville. We won't count Bo Dallas, and I'll tell you why in a second. we had Neville, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor again. I'm not sure if I'm missing anybody. Nakamura, Bobby Roode, Andrade, Gargano, Cole.
Oh, Drew Mack.
Drew Mack. Gargano, Cole, Drew Mack, Ciampa. Am I missing anybody else? I think that's it.
I think that's it.
Okay. Out of all those champions, because every champion that has held the title in NXT can work their ass off, with the exception of Bo Dallas and Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode was a fantastic character, but I said this when he got the title. I was like, his work rate just doesn't keep up. It doesn't keep up with the rest of them. So, I said I don't think Dream is there yet in terms of his work. I think he will be there. Like, I think he's getting better all the time as long as he stay healthy and out of trouble. But somebody like Dexter Lumis, no. Nah, you can't put that type of guy in there. Like, Adam Cole has shown he can work his ass off. Like, I don't want them to move into a position.
Triple threat?
Yeah, but see, like, Dexter Lumis has no business being in this shit.
No.
Right? So it's like... I still would like the title to be the work rate title. I mean, it's like the IC title, but for NXT, which elevates it and makes like everybody that has held the title except for Bo Dallas and goddamn Bobby Roode like had turned in excellent matches all the time. So yeah. I'd like for that to continue to happen. And I'm not sure. Like, okay, let's say Dream wins the title and is feuding with Dexter Lumis. That is not a good feud in terms of in-ring.
No.
You know?
No, and I don't think that happens. No, because, again, Dexter Lumis, they've showed at least you got to earn it in NXT. Like, they'll give him a Keith Lee feud before they do anything else. But, no, I think this is just a way to get Dream out of that feud without really saying, like, yo, Cole beat him clean. Like, Cole's like, he'll never get a chance at this title again. You can move him away from the title picture and say, you know, next week, Dexter Lumis, you've cost me, and boom. Or if you want to extend it even further, him you know, Cole, Dexter Lumis versus the other two Undisputed Era people, Lumis cost him again, and you start seeing maybe more sadistic side to Lumis. Because, again, I think he's a heel.
He is a heel.
So you gotta pull out those heel characteristics and show that maybe he's costing Dream on purpose. So you can lean into that, but now it's like, where does Cole go?
There's a lot of variables.
Cole did mention he's the best NXT champion ever, which might piss off Finn Balor, which is really the feud I think we've been, you know, headed towards.
That's the one.
Since Finn came back.
That's the feud. Okay. So real quick before we move on to Money in the Bank and how whack Raw and SmackDown have been, the Finn Balor character return has been very weird because I think they hadn't nailed down which way he was going. It was like turn him heel. It was like they turned him heel to make him a badass, and they kept the badass and turned him back babyface, which I get in theory because the attitude change works for him as a babyface. It works, but it happened so quick. Like, he was kicking Gargano in the face one week, and the next week he's getting attacked, it felt like. But that being said, Balor coming back to claim what's his against Adam Cole is what we want to see. As much as we love Velveteen Dream, there is nothing better at this particular moment, given the landscape, given Gargano and Ciampa should be out of the title picture because of their respective feuds, maybe work for the North American title, I have no idea, but they should be out. But Balor versus Cole is almost like a NXT Dream match of sorts. And especially with new attitude Balor, this is where you want to go with it. Like,
oh, yeah. I'm always okay with Finn losing, too. Like, he can lose at this takeover, go into SummerSlam takeover. And if you want to bring the demon back, like, fuck calling it the demon. Just Finn Balor with the face paint.
Dog.
The Prince?
Prince Devitt, in his multiple iterations of that character going into major pay-per-views for other companies, whether it was Progress or wherever the hell he was at, that's what the WWE kind of does. Yes. They commoditize, they make it a commodity rather than making it an organic thing. So they took the demon character and was like, we're going to sell this at every pay-per-view. Whereas what made Devitt, was he like the Joker or the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or like the multiple iterations of what you didn't know what he was going to come out to be. But the WWE couldn't monetize that. They can't monetize what they don't know what it's going to be. That's why like mask wrestlers sell well, because you can monetize a mask. But you can't monetize a character change every time he comes out for a pay-per-view. But they need to lean into that shit. Fuck it. Yep.
Bring the Prince back with the paint SummerSlam. Maybe when you can have some fans in attendance. Maybe.
It's the only way to travel, guys. I mean, he's too good. And look, on top of that, like, if Cole were to lose to Dream, I'm not down on Dream. I think Dream is great. But a Cole Dream feud back and forth for the title is not as good as a Balor and Cole back and forth for the title. There's just a lot of meat on that bone in terms of who's the best NXT champion of all time. Because they can literally go that route. Because Balor was the king of that for a while. He held that title for a while. And Cole broke that. Mm-hmm. And asshole Balor as a babyface, it works. I mean, I'm not saying it's a blessing in disguise, but because I still want the Walter match. But maybe this was the way you needed to go all along. And you're just going back to what you should have did in the first place. WrestleMania should have, like, I think I said that after Royal Rumble or after Worlds Collide, I said that I think it should have been a fatal four-way, because I feel like there's no way you should leave Balor out of the title picture at the takeover at WrestleMania. I think I said it should have been Ciampa, Gargano, Balor, and Cole for the title. And then it ended up being Ciampa and Gargano, which I was like, I don't care. We've seen this 10,000 times. And then Balor got pushed completely out of the title picture despite coming back with the sole purpose to reclaim what was his. It just felt weird.
Yep.
But now you're here again. So make it work. Make it work. This could be really good.
Yeah, just start it up again. Perfect moment. So we'll see. They have a couple of weeks to really hit the reset button. And then we'll see when the next takeover is. But I think that works. I think that should be the plan going forward. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're just going to give our predictions for the entire Money in the Bank card, running down the whole thing. You guys stay tuned. Check out this Blue Chew ad. We'll be right back. All right, we'll jump right back into the show. But first, guys, are you looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they'll work faster.
You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office to spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUEChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE.
Shout out to the sponsors. We are back and we are talking Money in the Bank, which goes down this weekend. Looking through it, we'll talk about some of the weekly feuds and how they've built it as we go along through the matches. With that being said, it's weird because there's really not a presence of the biggest faction that we have every week, which is Zelina Vega's faction. They don't really have a presence on this Money in the Bank card.
No. And I am baffled by this.
They've been carrying Monday Night Raw for weeks. None of them are in the match.
When I say I'm baffled, I am absolutely dumbfounded by this. Like, I was looking at the card, which is only six matches, and I was like, oh, what? Like,
yeah, there's going to be a late edition pre-show Almas defending the title or something.
Yeah, but I really thought that Almas would find his way into the ladder match. Because I'm really like, look, AJ Styles is great and all, but I really don't need him in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I just don't. He could win it too, but...
He could.
Like,
I'd argue he should, but we'll get there in a second. But yeah. Baffling that they aren't part of that. Let's go through some of the cards.
Wait. I want to talk about just a few things off of Raw that irked the shit out of me this week.
Oh, shit.
Raw stinks, okay? SmackDown stinks, too. SmackDown's
Raw
just like...
doesn't stink. SmackDown stinks.
Raw stinks, too. For a couple reasons. Like, look, this is not Drew McIntyre's fault. This is not working with no crowd, with him as a champion. It's just not. It's not his fault.
You don't like the countdown.
I don't like the countdown. That's one thing. But I think he's a star, right? But without a crowd, it's hard to really figure it out. So he's just, like, doing these things with Seth Rollins from week to week that I literally watch them, and I start to fast forward through them, and I was like, ah, maybe I should watch this shit, but I really don't care. I don't care.
You didn't like Seth's promo work?
But that's my problem. Seth's promo work has been excellent. Drew has just kind of been like, all right, cool, I'll kick your face off. It's missing the edge.
You're kind of rooting for the Monday Night Messiah to win.
Right, which is like the wrong way to go for your first title defense.
Yes, he deserves to win. Seth deserves to win with this character.
Right, so it's like, okay, this is kind of weird. But here's what I really didn't like about Raw this week. One, why did Ricochet and Cedric Alexander lose clean to a nobody-ass tag team?
I have no clue. Good job bringing that up. 50-50 booking. They'll probably win again next week.
But for what?
Or, talking about a pre-show, they'll probably run it back on a pre-show and they will win.
But why? Like, for them to have a tag team run that we're like kind of like, oh, this could work if they're the Flyboys, whatever the hell they're going to call them.
Yeah, two Flyboys. Yeah,
they just lost to a nothing-ass tag team. Shane Thorne and some dude. Yeah. Clean as a sheet.
I don't
understand that. Other thing I don't understand. The War Raiders, or whatever the fuck they're called, the Viking Raiders, whatever. I'm going to go back to calling them War Machines. Losing to the Street beating the Street Profits. Clean.
Non-title,
but why? If the only reason you should do that is if you're preparing to put them on a pay-per-view. But they're not here. They built this match up in 1 week, and they had them lose clean as a sheet to a tag team that nobody cares about that made them look even worse with that ride-along episode. What the fuck?
I thought that was funny.
Other thing I didn't like.
But all right, no, I agree.
You had that long-ass gauntlet match that kicked off Raw?
Yeah.
I mean, can you put some people in this match that we might think would win? Shelton Benjamin? Are you serious? Like, are we...
Shelton Benjamin, then Rock. But the other one started the feud and reintroduced Carrillo, which I still think they have to beat the shit out of Carrillo and entice him to join the crew.
Well, yeah, but I don't know, man. Like... Raw just stinks. Like, Raw is really bad.
And they're making bad decisions along the way. They, like, they had the, except for Asuka, she's amazing. Like, the Asuka, Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax thing was weird, only because, like, it wasn't bad because Asuka was in it. But Shayna, what have they done to Shayna Baszler?
I don't know, she has no teeth right now.
She just, it doesn't work. Like, her.
Nia has all the teeth. She can't job out to Nia. I don't care what size she is.
But it's whack. Like, I'm watching this, and as I'm watching, I'm like, Shayna can't win this shit. It's got to be Asuka, but it won't be.
No, but it might be Nia. Yeah.
I don't. Can't she get up the ladder? It's not even a joke.
With the knees?
I'm just saying. Between the knees, like, have we ever seen a big person win a ladder match?
Big Show, no.
Big Show never climbed. No.
I mean, just saw a big person win this not too long ago.
There isn't, I mean, what, I think Kane won it once?
Kane might have won it.
Kane's like tall.
Corbin's tall. He's not
big. Yeah, I'm talking like, because Otis being on in the Money in the Bank, I'm like, there's no way.
Otis ain't winning it. But what spots are Otis doing? I mean, Otis might do a
well. Well, you know what happens is you put the bigger, they're called the base. They're the base of these moves. They can hold the ladder to make sure it doesn't fall over. You know, they're the base of the match. There's always one really big person. Whether they're really, like, they're the base, and Nia Jax is the base. But there's no way in hell I see Nia climbing a ladder and then doing that fall after you pull the belt off the thing. Everybody always falls. They pull no way. Nia will die. The knees will blow out everything. You can't do it. So, Raw stinks, man. It stinks. I can't think of anything I liked on Raw. Nothing. SmackDown is no better.
Well, I like the Zelina Vega.
Well, I like them, but there was
thing. Like, they anytime lost. They're on air, they didn't get enough air this week. Yeah,
like they, like I'm.
They were thrown in that
thing. I was in the mindset like Andrade was going to win that shit. At a certain point, I was like, "Oh, Theory lost, Garza lost. All right, bring out Andrade. No, we're going to bring out AJ Styles, who just kind of uncovered himself from underneath the dirt. What?
He's alive. But, zombie AJ style.
Which is cool, but I just felt like Andrade should have been in that match. Like, he should be in this Money in the Bank ladder match. Zelina Vega has made them great. Styles, yeah, fine, but you put Andrade in that match, and it's like, it kicks it up another notch. Because who doesn't want to see Daniel Bryan and Andrade interact? Like, who don't want
to
see this?
They might just have to slow Andrade down, because when he gets there, he should probably win.
Maybe. I don't know.
And it comes down to, you can hold the briefcase for as long as you want, so I get it. Like, it would have made sense. But when he gets to Drew or whoever's the champion at that time, he has to win because he's that good right now.
Yeah.
Stable's that strong. The gimmick's that good. Zelina's that good. Sooner or later, you got to win. But in the meantime, he might become the longest reigning U.S. champion ever.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, the only other thing.
With one title defense.
Yeah. The only other thing that I'm curious about is, like, because I think we say this, like, usually the time between SummerSlam and Royal Rumble is when WWE likes to try things out. So, like, Kevin Owens was champion, they tried that out. Like, this is right now that period, because there's no fans, they're kind of trying things out, and they're finding out, I don't even know if they noticed this, but the Zelina Vega stable is working. So it's like, but I hope when fans come back, they don't move away from it. Because it's really good.
Who knows? Vince.
You never know.
Might just, put his finger on the button again and shake shit up. Who knows? All right, so Money in the Bank, the actual card. We didn't even got to touch it on SmackDown. We have the New Day champions, Big E and Kofi, versus The Miz and John Morrison, versus The Forgotten Sons, versus Lucha House Party, look at that, and a fatal four-way tag team match for the championships.
Why?
I don't know why. For the Forgotten Sons to win?
Why is this match happening?
The New Day just has to win again.
Like, okay.
Why is Lucha House Party in? And I like them, but
dude, they have no business being in this match. But it's clear, it's because the Usos are hurt. Like, that's obvious. The Usos being hurt is the reason why they had to throw another tag team. It could have just been a triple threat. But I still don't understand them putting the titles back on the New Day. I didn't get it. Like, you won it at WrestleMania. I mean, you retained it.
I think you've said it. Nothing to do. Put it on the New Day.
Yeah, but the Miz and Morrison, they could have held the title. Because, again, if you're going to put it back on the New Day, put it on the New Day at a pay-per-view. Not on just a damn SmackDown. So they could have won it here.
On a one-on-one match, right?
Yeah, like, so this match, like, I'm looking at them like, can the New Day lose this match? Like, should they? Like, they just got the titles. Forgotten Sons are whack. And, like, come on. Dog, I'm going to pick the New Day, but this match is stupid.
I don't understand it. Bayley versus Tamina.
Did you pick? You got to pick.
Oh, I'm taking the New Day. Oh, okay. I'm not taking the Forgotten Sons. Or you take Lucha House Party just to shake shit up? No, I'm taking the New Day. And then we have Bayley versus Tamina.
What?
Bayley's going to win, but low-key, Tamina's promos have been funny.
They actually have.
Her trying to not be as mean, showing a lot of range in her character, her being both psychiatrist and patient, she's funny. She ain't gonna win. Yeah. This is the best shit I've seen from her in years.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've never let her do anything. Like, Tamina's always been the muscle. She's always been muscle. And now she's got an opportunity to show some personality. The only thing I wonder in this match, because I think Bayley's gonna retain as well, is if they're gonna try to find a way to, like, stick the needle in to get the Sasha Bayley thing going, because they're clearly planting the seeds for it. So
yeah, sooner or later it has to happen.
Yeah, well, it happened here. And it caused something crazy where Sasha gets her DQ'd or some shit like that. I don't know.
Yep. And we can agree that there's no way anyone from SmackDown wins that Money in the Bank briefcase.
No, we don't agree on that.
No.
No.
All right, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Let's do that next then. Asuka, Shayna, Nia, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans, and Carmella. Carmella already had it. She's out. Dana Brooke, not in this lifetime. Lacey Evans?
Yeah, man.
Nah.
I'm not picking her.
I saw this shit.
I'm not picking her.
It was a dud.
It was a dud. I'm not picking her. But I feel like there's two things at work here. One, somebody back there is going, boy, these fucking rosters are fucked. We need a superstar shakeup quick.
Yes, they do.
Because the women on SmackDown, because it's weird, right? Like, Naomi's not in this match. Like, you have Ruby Riott on Raw. You have Liv Morgan on Raw, who you're trying to push. I had a match with Charlotte. Was another thing. I was like, okay. They were really going to push.
Yeah,
she lost, but it was a respectable loss. Like, that was a push loss.
Yeah. But you know what? She looked good in the ring. She's gotten better as a wrestler.
She has, but you could clearly tell they're
going to
push.
Or they're putting her in there with really good people.
Yeah, but you could clearly tell they're moving in that direction. But there's so many women on Raw, but there's none on SmackDown.
Yep.
Bianca would benefit from being over there. Somebody. Anybody. But I'm looking at this match, and as much energy as they use to focus on Asuka, Shayna, and Nia Jax, it almost seems too obvious for one of them to win. And Lacey could end up winning this. If Dana Brooke wins, it'd feel like Zack Ryder winning the ladder match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, she's just going to lose her cash in. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, but I'm still picking Asuka because I just want to see Asuka dancing with a briefcase.
I'm going to go with Shayna Baszler winning again. I don't know why.
I know why.
Just because
it's easy for her to cash in.
Too early to give up.
It's easy. Like, that's an easy title for Shayna. She could just cash in, get a cheap win on Becky. Yeah. And elongate the feud.
And be that. Eventually, if Ronda wants to come back, I don't know, after those promos, but I still swear those were a work. And, you know, bashing WWE fans, I think that's the easiest way to do it.
So sure.
I think Shayna, the narrative continues. And then, so I'll pick Shayna, you pick Asuka. It's going to be interesting. Do you have high hopes for this pre-recorded match? Which, are the women and men going at the same time?
I don't know. I don't have high hopes.
You don't seem like you don't have high hopes. Yeah, I just noticed by your tone. Why'd I ask that?
I asked
you if you had high hopes for a WWE program.
No, I mean, it could end up being surprisingly good, but I'm not getting my hopes up. That's all.
All right, you're going to let them shock you.
Yeah.
Then we have title matches. Braun Strowman versus Bray Wyatt. Strowman wins.
Yeah, I think
it's Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, come on. We know where this is going. You can't fool us. Come on. Stop.
No. But the Fiend's going to fuck him up. Eventually. So cool.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
I don't mind it. Yo, they scrubbed Roman Reigns from the promo video. We didn't talk about that. How you give him the Benoit?
That was baffling. Because it was like, because you didn't need to. You know what I'm saying?
No, he's the golden boy. He's coming back sooner or later. Man had cancer.
Yeah, I just don't.
You can't expect him to risk his life.
I don't understand the rationale behind that. Like, why did y'all? Why? Because I'm quite sure they're not down on Roman Reigns, but
no. But does it take away from Seth?
I don't know.
Like, do you think maybe that upstaged Seth? Like, you don't want fans to be like, well, this is really Roman's title. Like, I don't get it.
No, it made no sense, but whatever.
I don't know. But no, they just did a thing on Tuesday. The best Roman Reigns WrestleMania matches.
Yeah.
He's the golden goose. I just don't know why you don't show him. It's hard to show that match without him.
Right. But they did. They found a way to do it.
Yeah, like, Seth picked up the pin. Like, anyway. It's on him. It's weird. So, Braun Strowman winning. I'm assuming you have Braun Strowman winning.
Yes, yes.
Then Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins.
I have Drew winning, but the more...
Drew's going to win. Seth deserves to win.
Yeah, the longer this feud goes, it's just like, you're going to make them put it back on Seth. Because,
I'm
not saying Drew's a bad champion. It's just, it's not working for me without fans. Because it feels like he deserves more, right? Like, it feels like he deserves more and he deserves a crowd to have this
but
moment.
But then you ride it out until fans can come back.
Yeah, but you can't get him outshined by the heel every damn time. Because he's a baby. Like, what I said before. Like, he's a baby face right now. And Drew is much better as a heel. So when he's working with another heel who is outshining him routinely in promos, it's like, well...
it's tough.
Yeah, what are we doing?
He doesn't have the ammo to come back.
No. It's...
Yeah, you took the bullets out his gun. So, yeah, that is tough. But I think he retains. I expect it to be a good match. Probably best match in the night. Men's Money in the Bank ladder match. Daniel Bryan, Rey Mysterio, Aleister Black, Corbin, Otis, AJ Styles.
I really don't know. And maybe that's a good thing.
Tough.
Maybe it's good I don't know.
Corbin can't win it again.
He can.
I mean, he could. But no. Otis not winning it.
That's
Corbin can win it. But Corbin wins, we riot. It is not his fault. Just let the guy fucking chill for a second. Aleister. It feels like the right time to put on Aleister. And just make him real fucking, you know, just real ominous.
You mean they haven't done enough of that already?
No, they haven't. They haven't made him NXT ominous. NXT was like, I don't know if he's a face or a heel. He's just real cranky and shit. He likes candles. I like that guy. You can bring that back. Like, you said he's not a heel, but he can stalk someone with the briefcase. He could be real dark. So I would like to see that. Tommy End was an asshole.
He was.
Bring the asshole back out of Aleister Black. Yeah, fuck it. Give me Aleister Black. I was going to pick Daniel Bryan, but I talked myself into it.
I don't know. I'm
AJ Styles could win this shit.
Yeah, because, all right. You're going to need a heel for Drew McIntyre. And it feels like an AJ Styles-Drew McIntyre feud could happen. But that's also a feud that can happen without the briefcase. That could just be a feud.
Yep.
And those type of feuds are what elevates your champion. So I won't say AJ Styles. To me, it has to be somebody that's going to take advantage of the title opportunity. Well, the ability to cash in. And I can't see, like, Black doing that. I can't see him, like, being a dick and just cashing it in. And I damn sure can't see Rey Mysterio, like, what the hell are you doing here?
I don't know what he's doing. That's a good question.
And, like, with Daniel Bryan, I see, like, an honorable cash-in. Like, I'm going to get you next week at paper. Like, I can see that. But I can't see him, like, running down and cashing it in.
I can. If The Fiend's the champion, he owes The Fiend the fade. I can see him cashing on The Fiend.
I just don't think they're going to go that route.
I think they're smart. They got history there. He can fuck up The Fiend when The Fiend becomes champion.
You're giving him too much credit. I don't think they're that smart.
Yep.
Because, I don't know. I'm going to go with Aleister Black, but, man, Aleister Black with a briefcase just doesn't look right to me.
I need cranky Tommy End.
I don't know what's going on with this. This match is so weird. Because, like, I'm more interested in seeing what this match ends up being than who wins.
Yeah.
Because it's going to get overproduced, and maybe it'll be good, but good Lord.
And, Aleister Black, and then a superstar shakeup, put him on SmackDown. We get Black versus The Fiend, maybe on some honorable shit. It's not bad. People have been wanting that.
Sure, why not? Baby Yawn. Yeah,
why not?
Why not?
All right, so since you're being an old man, And we ran through the whole card. That is our show for today. We'll be back over the weekend, or excuse me, on Monday. We'll be back talking UFC, which happens on Saturday. We'll be talking about some boxing news and getting ready to get into our week. We'll save wrestling maybe towards the end if some wild shit happens. We got to throw wrestling in there on Monday as well, and then just fill the Friday show with some craziness. So, man, next week's, it's a packed one. Combat sports are coming back. It's exciting. Make sure you guys follow us on social media at Corner Podcast _ me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. Shout out to the sponsors. Check out the Blue Chew. And shout out to the network Blue Wire. Till next week, though, we're out.
Peace.
For the ones who get going when the going gets tough, and the ones who know we're tougher together. For the pathfinders breaking new ground, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as fast access to experts and 24/7 customer support. Because we know you have people depending on you, so you can always depend on us. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.